And with the familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live. My name's Josh Nason. It is Sunday, July 13th. We come to you coast to coast from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches to the sticks every single day on WrestlingObserver.com, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, all of our over-the-air affiliates throughout this fine country, AM and FM. If you don't know what that means, kids, ask your parents. iHeart, TuneIn, various apps everywhere. You get a signal. In this fine world, you can hear my voice, and I thank you for that each and every day. And a special shout out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service each and every day. I'm going to be with you for the next hour, and we had a lot to talk about. The busiest, second busiest weekend in the United States in wrestling this year, outside WrestleMania weekend, of course. It just happened. Actually, it's not even done yet. But in the books already, AEW All In, Saturday night's main event, Great American Bash, Goldberg's career, Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor, Seth Rollins' knee, all those things in the books. We're going to chat about that. Of course, Adam Cole had a very emotional speech at All In. His future, his career and his future in doubt. As I mentioned, Seth Rollins. Was it a swerve or not? Doesn't appear to be. We'll chat about that. My frustration with how wrestling continually screws up retirement speeches on TV. It happened to Goldberg last night. He got all of 39 seconds, I believe. Unbelievable. I'll talk about that. My frustrations of just how this keeps happening, especially these old WCW guys. Hangman Page is your new AEW World Champion. We'll chat about that. Future of the Death Riders, all the other developments from AEW All In, and Saturday night's main event and the rest of the week, and of course, WWE Evolution Night. So all that and more awaits you. Stick around with me for the next hour on Wrestling Observer Live. We'll be right back after these very important messages. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason again. Sunday, July 13th, second biggest weekend in the United States in pro wrestling of the year, behind WrestleMania weekend. We are in the middle of it, actually over the big storm, so to speak. One show left tonight being a WWE Evolution. We'll talk about that later on the show. Boy, what a Saturday. I hope, like me, you got your exercise in early. You got your chores done early. Because if not, you were there, if you live on the East Coast or wherever, from early afternoon through the nighttime. What a day. We'll chat about it. Let's start with All In. That was the biggest news, I guess you could say, of the weekend, no doubt, unless something big, of course, happens late night on Sunday. But All In, as expected, was it's AEW's WrestleMania. And the news kept going and going and going and going. I think we had about 20 different news posts on AEW yesterday alone. And that's kind of what it should be. You want developments to happen. You want things to happen. You want to feel like you saw moments. That's a big thing, moments, right? And we did see some moments. And the biggest moment, I would say, Hangman Page is our new AEW World Champion, defeating Jon Moxley in a very violent and bloody Texas death match, as expected. I joked beforehand to our editors group, it'd be funny if it was just a 7-minute match. Moxley wins with a roll up. Everyone goes home upset. With a little bit of a swerve that way, right? That would have been hilarious. No blood at all. But yeah, there was plenty of blood. There was blood, I think, in the first like 3 to 4 minutes, and it just kept going and going and going. This was, I love this match. At the end of it, I sat to myself and thought to myself and said that was great. And I really enjoyed it. It was AEW's version of the Cody Rhodes Roman Reigns story in a way. I know some people may not like to hear that. Can't compare the two, but you can. Hangman Page, his story goes back years and years and years. It's been well documented. And they very similar to the Bloodline Rules match in that you had all these run-ins. We knew it was going to happen. Hangman Page basically forecasted that. That's why he won the Texas Death Match to open those things up. We knew it wasn't going to be a straightforward wrestling match. And so these rule-bending matches open these things up, and kind of like we had with the Bloodline Rules and so on and so forth. I don't love it any time, but in situations like this, and I guess Cody and Roman to an extent, I'll take it because everything seemed to make sense. You had the, and I don't, you know, I don't love the trend. WWE does this a lot. Indie shows does a lot. I've talked about before, but this, this seemed to work. And you had the returns of Bryan Danielson and Darby Allin on screen, and Bryan Danielson running in to, of course, the Death Riders. And there was, we're not going to go through every beat by beat, but Bryan Danielson coming in with the Blue Panther mask reveals it, does the running, the running knee to Wheeler Yuta. And then Darby Allin, who did this, filmed this video when he was climbing Mount Everest, appeared and said, "I'm coming for you, Mox. I'm going to take everything from you." And then all of a sudden, the Allin descends from the ceiling of Globe Life Stadium. I think it was a spot. I don't know how it came off in the building. I was so curious, but it felt understated a little bit on TV that this guy was rappelling from the top of a Major League Baseball stadium. I think it just kind of got like, because it was so crazy, I think it kind of got understated, if that's even possible. But in the end, those guys ran off the Death Riders. We had lots of run. The Young Bucks ran in. We had the Swerve Strickland storyline tie-in to help Hangman Page. And Hangman Page defeating Jon Moxley. There was a bed of nails. There was barbed wire. There's everything. And I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed everything it turned out. I enjoyed the storyline. And thankfully, I wrote a column on Saturday, posted kind of a couple hours before the show, so I didn't think a ton of people read it. But I said, it's going to be nice to have the AEW world title seen again. And that briefcase came open. That title's out for the first time since October, something I did not like. But it's finally unearthed, and we can get back to normal. And so much of the talk was that this is, you know, Excalibur is talking after it's a new era of AEW, or what the phrasing he used, I can't remember. But essentially, to paraphrase, that this is, you know, this new era, this new beginning. And you kind of feel, and you felt over the months and months and months, that this is a better show and more cohesive. And granted, with the Death Riders and all this stuff, there's a lot of consternation issues. But for today, those issues, it seemed it paid off well. You had almost 30,000 people in there. Don't know what the gate was, but I think it was around 3 million. I think that was the idea. At least going into was they were just on top of that, as Tony Khan was mentioning. And this was a killer show, and it was a long show. I did not watch the pre-show, but from the start of the main card, which is at 3 Eastern, through the end, it ended just right before 9, so 6 hours. So their longest pay-per-view to date, unless I'm forgetting something. And again, I'm not counting even the pre-shows, so that's another 2 hours. And if you watch the press conference after, I think that ended right or a little after 11 o'clock. That is a long day if you're covering this stuff, a long day if you have to take all this in and so on. That's not even counting NXT and Saturday Night's Main Event, which AEW went head-to-head with for their last hour. How about that? So I don't know if it exactly hurt that. I guess we'll see viewership trends and so on and so forth. But Hangman Page winning your title, Bryan Danielson doing the run-in, and Darby Allin. So we'll see what the follow-up is. And we'll see what's next for the Death Riders. Is this going to be the beginning of the end? Are they going to stick together? New members? I opine maybe Daniel Garcia. It might be time to juice him up a little bit and maybe change him. So yeah, that was the big news. Other stuff, obviously, this was a bit of a surprise to me. Kyushika Okada defeating Kenny Omega, winning the AEW Unified title at All In. And my, I should say, I don't like to, you know, talk about the family too much, but my daughter, I've not exposed her to pro wrestling, just for fear of her perhaps, you know, pantomiming things. Or you know, acting out things she shouldn't. And she's, you know, almost 9. And I just have just really tried to kind of keep her away from it. And she, just because the show was so long, and my wife and her came back from being out most of the day, and she came in and said, "Well, I guess we're doing this." My wife said, "Okay." And so her first ever pro wrestling match was Kazuchika Okada versus Kenny Omega. She thought that Okada was the good guy and Omega was the bad guy, because, to quote her, "Omega was ugly." I guess maybe he's making some faces or something like that. So she sat and watched this whole match with me. And yeah, I was very surprised. And surprised in that, I just love the idea of Kenny Omega being one of the top guys. And I guess he is, and he will be. But I haven't loved this Okada run. And I guess if this is kind of part of the story between them, and I think, you know, if there's one more left to go, we'll see down the road. But I just haven't Okada has not blown me away in this AEW run, and Omega always comes through. So hopefully this is a hopefully still going to see a lot more Kenny Omega. There's so many more things to do, but I was surprised. We'll see how the story plays out, but I guess you can't have all the baby faces winning the title. So we'll see. I think this maybe this is part of the story with Okada. You know, they made such a big deal about him being, you know, the best tournament wrestler of all time. Perhaps this is the beginning of a story telling him where he's not going to win in the Continental Classic, and that is that changes him. There's so many one things I came away with on this show, and skipping around a little bit, there were so many moments where I'm like, the you can see the future of AEW in some of these matches with the Bandido types and the Kyle Fletchers and all these other younger guys that are coming through, that this is really going to be important in this next year or so to kind of start to figure out how you elevate some of these other people up. Konosuke Takeshita as well, you know, those type of talents where you start to kind of integrate them and starting to have them get wins. And perhaps one of those talents, those younger guys coming through over Okada, would be a big nod toward that. We'll see. But they're AEW's future is bright. But yeah, Okada picking up the win. Tony Storm, I thought that was a little bit of a surprise, defeating Mercedes Moné. I thought there might be a little bit more on the bone there with Mercedes Moné in this absolutely crazy undefeated streak. But I guess we'll have to see what happens there, because Tony Storm already has a future challenger and Ring of Honor Women's World Champion Athena. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about how we got there. More news, Adam Cole, all kinds of other stuff as well. Coming right back with more Wrestling Observer Live. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, July 13th. We're going to continue. We're talking about AEW All In for this segment. Next segment, we'll get into the WWE news of the weekend. Of course, Tony Storm, as I mentioned before the break, defeating Mercedes Moné. I thought it was a good match. Here's the thing. There was so much going on yesterday and so many great matches back to back to back. I hope, and it's one thing with so much wrestling, I'd love to go back and just watch these matches individually, give them some time, and then come back to them. Because I think sometimes when you have, it's like if someone just puts, like, if you're a dessert guy or dessert gal, one, you know, and you have, like, you know, this cake and these brownies on, and if you keep eating them back to back to back, eventually kind of loses their specialness, I guess you could say, or really any type of meal or anything like that. And wrestling is the same way. And I think with so many great matches back to back to back to back, you get a little bit desensitized. There's not enough time to breathe. And now, if somebody with so much wrestling, when is someone going to have the time to go back and watch these? So, but I do hope to go back at some point and check these matches out individually. And I'm going to guess I like them a little bit more. The impact is going to be a little bit more. And I think this Storm Moné match is going to be one of those that I come back to and probably like a little bit more than I did in the moment. The same thing with Okada and Omega and so on and so forth. But it was, Tony Storm is still the champion. So you kind of start to look at who is she going to be able to put over that's going to help kind of rise up the level? Who's the next up? If it's not Moné, is it Athena, who won the Women's Gauntlet and she'll be receiving a future AEW World title match? Is it going to be her? You could do that. You could do, to me, the woman, the next one up is Willow Nightingale. And it is way past time that she gets her due. She should have been the one to snap Jade Cargill's win streak. It's, with all respect to the rest of the ladies, Chris Statlander, Megan Bain, whoever they're pushing, Tekla, you're next up to be the next one is Willow Nightingale. She did not win the Women's Gauntlet. So it looks like Athena's going to get her shot, and she needs to be in the main roster. It's stupid she's still in Ring of Honor at this point. So you got to start to plan that out. But Willow and Athena are up next, and then some in AEW. But yeah, Mercedes Moné, she still, of course, has a ton of title belts. So how that starts to work in next, I think she had a ton of titles, and I think maybe the dismantling of that is the next great story. She's already under contract, I think, this May or this March? She signed a 3-year deal. So maybe it's another year past that. But regardless, how that works and her next, the interesting how both of their stories go and their next defeats and so on. But really, that world title, who's next and who's going to take on and who's going to defeat Tony Storm, become one of the next big players in the women's division. Very, very important stuff there. The rest of the news, of course, from the day, Adam Cole had his promo that's been talked about, emotional address, Brian Alvarez reported that he was injured on a lariat on Thursday. Adam Cole just has such bad luck, you know. He and Seth Rollins, I saw, it was pointed out last night that these two guys just when they're getting going and in kind of these big moments, something happens. And Adam Cole, of course, essentially robbed of the AEW world title and his opportunity just because he broke his ankle in two places, jumping off a small jump off a ramp at AEW Grand Slam years ago. Kept him out of action some time. Of course, he had a concussion. He was out for 9 months the year before that. Just not a lot of luck, Adam Cole. Not really sure what the injury is. I think it seems that it's probably concussion related. I'm going to guess just based on the fact of how he got hurt and so on. I don't think it's like a serious neck injury because he came out, he was fine. He seemed fine. He seemed lucid and he was okay. But if it's something that, you know, they've been concerned about a long time with the neck, if it's a, you know, Adam Copeland situation or something like that, where there's surgery needed, and this was kind of, they did x-rays and they're like, oh, this isn't good, then perhaps that's it. But it seems to be concussion related. Can't, don't quote me on that, but that's, you know, that's that. MJF, speaking of Adam Cole, winning the Casino Gauntlet. So he's got a future world title match. So that should be pretty big. You could do the cash-in thing, which I assume is going to be kind of the tease, but that's a nice little wrinkle there for Hangman Page in terms of what's going to be next for him. Tony Khan, I believe, is going to announce on Wednesday when those title shots or how those are going to work, if they're going to be anytime, anywhere. So that might change things quite a bit as well. I think that Casino Gauntlet might have been my second favorite match on the show. That might sound crazy with all the other good stuff. This is why I need to do a rewatch. But in the moment, that Casino Gauntlet, I love that. So many different personalities, so many different stars that they had interacting. The surprises were pretty minimal. Juice Robinson and the Gun Club are back. We'll see if how that works. I think the guns are a tremendous young team. I think WWE would love to have them. And we'll see what happens. I was worried because they've only had one match, I think one or two matches since last September. They've been on TV since what, February or March? They came back for that one match against the Hurt Syndicate, essentially get killed, and then disappeared. And that would have me concerned. So, but I thought the men's Casino Gauntlet match was a lot of fun. I liked it better than the women's match. But MJF winning, I would think, a huge shock there. Of course, he's got some unfinished business with Mystico and Mark Briscoe, so a lot of stuff to him to do. So they don't need to rush that match in the immediate future. We had, of course, Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay winning their tag team match against the Young Bucks, and now the Young Bucks no longer EVPs in storyline. So you have all that as well. And I thought this was an entertaining match, especially the second half. The first one took a little bit of time to get going. As has been mentioned elsewhere, the Adam Cole speech really, not intentionally, took the wind out of the TNT title match, and also a little bit of this one. Just it took, like, the first part, I was kind of like, this isn't my favorite match I've seen when it comes to Strickland and Ospreay match. And then that second half, that one sequence they had which ended with the Canadian Destroyers into Hidden Blade and the swerve kick, the kick to the head is. The house call, that from there, everything just got ramped up and it was really, really good. So this was another one. Again, a rewatch would do it well. We had Dustin Rhodes, speaking of the TNT championship, Dustin Rhodes winning the title. That did not seem to go over well on social. And I understand it was for the moment and so on. And Dustin Rhodes now holds three titles and they really wanted to make this thing of him wrestling, what, three times in 24 hours or 36 hours or something along those lines. I can't remember what it was, but they wanted to give Dustin his moment. And Tony Khan clearly loves Dustin Rhodes and reveres him quite a bit. And Dustin Rhodes now winning his first AEW singles title. And of course, he holds the Ring of Honor tag team titles, Ring of Honor six-man titles, which still exist for some reason. And now he is the TNT champion. I think most expect, including myself, that Kyle Fletcher is going to beat him pretty quickly. I think the moment has passed. And I think Kyle Fletcher, who probably is going to win over Adam Cole, is going to defeat him probably by the time we speak next Sunday. How about that? We had in the women's gauntlet, as I mentioned, Athena winning that. We had Siri debuting. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing her name. And Harley Cameron made her return in that match. Not in the match, but as far as interfering in the match. There was a lot of interference in that match. Sky Blue interfering as well. And then we also had the return since, I guess, believe for the first time since she's become a contracted wrestler. Alex Windsor made her return in this match as part of the gauntlet. So the AEW women's division gets a little bit deeper. And, of course, we had Adam Copeland making his return. Boy, I kind of buried the lead on that. Adam Copeland saving Christian. This whole angle at the end felt very compressed. Kind of like they wanted to have done this a while ago, but they just did not get there. And so what happened, in case you didn't see it, the tag team championship match, the three-way, which really was just a appetizer for this. This is really what they wanted to get to. So FTR was complaining or getting in confrontation with the patriarchy. Christian Cage says, all right, let's get out of here. Nick Wayne grabs him, takes him out, and then he, Mama Wayne, and Kip Sabian, you know, put the boots to him, about to give him a concerto, and then who just happened to be backstage? But Adam Copeland. And Adam Copeland happened backstage and had his spike bat with him. He returned his first time since being taken out at April's Dynasty by FTR. So that worked. So Adam Copeland ran out. He took out Nick Wayne, took out Kip Sabian, took out FTR, took Sabian and Wayne out again, and then looked at Christian Cage. And we all knew this is where it was going to be heading, because that the final run of Adam Copeland is going to be with Christian Cage, his friend. They're going to unite and reform their team. But it didn't fully happen on this night. The first start of it happened. Adam Copeland telling Christian Cage, go find yourself, a callback to a lewd word he said, Christian Cage said to Adam Copeland months and months and months ago as their feud got started. And he left Spike in the ring and left Christian Cage to think. So we know that the Christian Cage turn is coming. And we know these two are going to unite, and they have a long runway in the tag team division, which I assume will end with the Young Bucks wraps it next year's All In. We'll see about that, but that's my early prediction there. So yeah, overall, you know, a few other things from All In, but overall, I thought it was a very entertaining show. It was a long show, but honestly, the fact it was on in the middle of the afternoon, I thought was pretty great. I would rather have that than a long show where I'm looking at the clock and it's like midnight and I'm completely exhausted and trying to stay awake. You know, I think most of us think that, especially those who live on the East Coast. But overall, this was a home run, financially a success. Again, almost 30,000 in the building, according to Tony Khan, and near a $3 million gate. And there was a lot of worry early on when tickets went on sale, and they were a little slow to start, but they slowly picked up. The place looked like it literally cost $1 million or more. Stage looked good, looked professional. And this was a big win for AEW. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the other side of the coin, which is WWE. They had their own big night. They've had a big weekend. Goldberg retiring, getting his retirement speech cut off. We have, of course, the Great American Bash. We'll talk about Seth Rollins. We'll talk about tonight's Evolution and a lot more. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason, coming right back after this. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. Let's get into some WWE news and events from this very, very busy July weekend. Of course, if you missed the first part of the show, if you're listening on Sports Byline or one of the affiliates or so on, tune in, iHeart. We talked about AEW All In and all the news from that event. So you can always catch the replay right after you're listening to this, or you can catch all the replays at WrestlingObserver.com. If you're a subscriber, check us out. Also available on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So check us out there. But yeah, let's get in some WWE news. Where do we begin? Let's begin with the Seth Rollins injury. Part of the biggest news of the night, obviously, because he is a big part of the plans going forward. And one of the top stars, Seth Rollins, sustaining a serious leg injury during his match with LA Knight on Saturday night's main event. I had put the family to bed, sat down. I'm like, hey, why not? I watched 6 hours or 7 hours of wrestling. Why don't I watch some more? So I turned on Saturday night's main event just in time to see Seth Rollins land awkwardly on a moonsault off the second rope, did a flip, landed his leg, and immediately grabbed his knee, his right knee. And the referee talked to him. Paul Heyman talked to him and all this. And pretty soon after, he talked to a doctor. They went to the finish. And LA Knight defeating Seth Rollins, which I assume was obviously a call in the ring. I say assume because now there's so much talk about, like, oh, is this real? Because in the moment, everyone's saying, oh, he's going to come in and cash in at the end of the night and leave this thing as a WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Obviously, that was defending the main event. However, according to Brian Alvarez and others, that the injury is legit. Brian pointing last night that the last 40 minutes had to be completely changed, and that was something that was supposed to happen later. There's something that was supposed to happen later that didn't as a result of the injury, which, of course, was probably perhaps a cash-in in storyline. Seth has, of course, until next June to cash in, so even with an injury, surgery, long-term recovery, all this stuff, you know, he could return before then. So we still have no idea what the injury is, the severity, if it's a torn ACL, MCL, something like that. But he buckled, and it's legit, and we'll see what happens from there. But now you have Seth Rollins, who I'm sure was big into the plans for SummerSlam and could be, you know, a CM Punk match. It could have been, again, with the cash-in, could be defending the title, could have been against Walter. Gunther, yes. So there's a lot to get into there, and I guess we'll see in the next. I guess we'll know. My guess is on Monday's Raw we'll know what the deal is, and it's going to be explained in storyline and so on. And who knows? How do you not make Seth Rollins a babyface now as part of this, or do they not care? But I'm going to guess we're going to get an in-ring promo on Monday to help kind of set us straight. So that's a bummer for him, a guy that again has had a variety of injuries through the years. And you know, he's leading this group with Paul Heyman, Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed, and so on. And he's going to miss, if it's as serious as it is, say it's a torn ACL, he's going to be out for the better part of a year. And that's a bummer for someone right in their athletic prime to be going through that. But we'll kind of see what happens. And like I said, I'm sure by the end of Monday's Raw, we're going to find that out. Let's get to the thing I really wanted to talk about, not injury related, but Bill Goldberg, my guy, you know, Bill Goldberg. 58 years old, finally hanging them up. He had not wrestled. This is not similar to the retirement of Bryan Danielson or even John Cena when it comes to frequency. So Goldberg had not wrestled in a couple of years. I believe it was the Roman Reigns match at Elimination Chamber a couple of years ago. So it's not like he's been in the mix. This is kind of a thing that he wanted to do. Who knows when it got brought up. Or who brought it up? I'm not really sure. I'm sure he's explained it on his podcast. But Goldberg, this is his last match, and he made his appearances and kind of built this up. And him and Gunther started back at Bad Blood last October, I believe, or maybe September. And this led to this. And you know, the match, it looked like what it probably should have been for a 58-year-old. He looked at as if I look at 58 like Goldberg does, I've lived a fantastic life. I don't think I will look like Goldberg does. But he looked like a big, powerful 58-year-old, and he had talked about his preparing for this and so on and so forth. He had a giant knee brace on his left knee. He was limping and so on. So yeah, it was this was the last match of an old dog. And he went out there and he didn't embarrass himself. Gunther carried him pretty well. It was a lot of power moves, wasn't a lot of going to his back early, did a spear through the barricade on the outside, got in. Hit a spear, had his hope spot, jackhammer, you know, referee got knocked out and so on and so forth. So at the end of it, you know, he submits to a sleeper. And then about, well, I don't know, 10 seconds after, we go to a commercial break at like 9:57. I don't remember them going to commercials this close to the end of the show. I thought that the show was over, that they had a hard out and they decided to get in early. Because remember, this is on network TV and you can't do overruns on network TV unless it's like an NFL game or something along those lines. Why WWE doesn't get that courtesy, I don't know. But unless it's an NBA game, NFL game, something like that, where overruns are expected and sometimes welcomed, that's how that happened. This did not happen in this case. And so Goldberg, they cut back. It was such a surreal, like 3 minutes. So they cut back and Michael Cole's in the ring and he pitched it to Goldberg, and Goldberg talks for, I think this whole segment lasted 39 seconds. WWE shared on their social. They shared the short clip on their social media. And Goldberg started his speech. And of course, when you do a retirement speech, it's not going to be done in 39 seconds. And then they ran the credits and that was it. There was no mention of him, the speech being available on YouTube. There was nothing like stay with our socials. They couldn't run long, I assume, on Peacock. It's a simulcast. But there was no, there was just, it just ended. And I was sitting there like, this is unbelievable. I know a lot of the 40 minutes had to be changed, but did the, like, I'm so curious, what was the plan ever for him to do any of his speech on TV? Or is this just something they're like, let's just throw this in? Why was the commercial placed the way it was? Why did they come back for 40 seconds? I don't get any of this, but I need to know. I also need to know, like, why isn't, as of now, and I'll have to check this in a little bit, perhaps at the break, I don't believe this is on WWE's YouTube channel when, as of this point. At least it wasn't as of this morning. There are some clips of it, actually some full audio of it, full video of it, that fans took, and it went about 8 minutes. Why is this not on their YouTube? I don't understand this. Why wasn't on it last night? And this, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I think for some reason, and this doesn't happen that often because we don't get a lot of these on TV, sorry. But Sting, you remember his retirement, AEW Revolution, and the pay-per-view feed ended with him like in the middle of the speech. I was furious at that. The speech is the thing that caps it all off. When they say all the things they want to say, it's the emotion. You see people in the ring, you see the reverence and so on and so forth. And that's what Goldberg got robbed out of last night. He said his thing to the fans in attendance, but the million or so people watching, they should have got that same experience too. That's the cherry on top of the sundae. Sting is the same thing. I think they eventually put it up on YouTube, but on pay-per-view, I thought it was almost more inexcusable because there was, if I remember that show, it was a really good show, but there were some things that like, okay, cut 5 minutes out here, cut 10 minutes out here, and make sure that even if you have like 5 minutes left to pay for your time, you don't have to go up right to the last minute. Give yourself some time so you at least get that part in. I find it unexcusable. And you have a little bit more difficulty because you're on network TV. But I just look at that and I just get so frustrated because, again, I'm 47. I enjoy those type of things. And, you know, when you have Hall of Fame speeches that get cut early, you know, there's that. But even like when athletes hang it up, you want to hear them say their, quote unquote, their final words. That's just part of just this whole thing of what we buy into and so on. And Goldberg didn't get that. I just, that stuff just drives me crazy. Hopefully WWE will put it on their YouTube. If not, we'll find the video of it and post it on our site. Maybe by the time you hear this and some of the fan videos and so on and so forth. So, and my John Cena thing never happened. I did a column on that it would have been great to have John Cena come out and get speared and they've never had an in-ring confrontation. And I can't believe we're robbed of that. I just, again, one of those things like, look back on it, it's like there's so many chances to do that and they just never did anything. I don't get it, especially both of them in their retirement year. It's like, I don't know, so strange. Jelly Roll, we talked last week about Kenny Omega's quotes. We played Kenny Omega's quotes about, you wouldn't be surprised one day we're going to see Mr. Beast and Logan Paul in the main event of a major pay-per-view, WrestleMania someday. And he kind of explained his thinking. And then we get Jelly Roll, famous musician, the big WWE fan. He is going to be in a featured match at SummerSlam against Logan Paul, Randy Orton, and Jelly Roll against Logan Paul and Drew McIntyre. This is what we're at. This is where we are at. And I have no problem with Mr. Roll, Mr. Jelly Roll. My family enjoys his music, my wife and daughter especially. But I shouldn't be surprised the celebrity aspect. I think maybe the fact that Logan Paul is in this is leading me to it. But this, you couldn't get two further dichotomies between the two companies than AEW and WWE than what we saw at All In to Jelly Roll making his debut in SummerSlam match. And I believe he was on the show. I did not see that first part of it. But of course, he was on SmackDown. He and Logan Paul got physical leading into this. But, you know, if you're sitting there saying AEW would have definitely done this if given the option, 100% they would have. I mean, they got the Costco guys still doing stuff. I'm sure they'd rather have Jelly Roll than the Costco guys. Just a guess. All right. So then let's go to Evolution. We have a few more minutes. Let's preview Evolution real quick. We're not going to get to Great American Bash. I'm sorry, everybody. WWE Evolution coming up tonight at, 7 p.m. Eastern. So this count this as the preview show, so to speak, very short preview show. All women's show, and fortunately getting the short end of the stick due to all the other stuff going on this weekend that has been talked to death. Let's just get into the card. We have WWE Women's Champion Tiffany Stratton defending against Trish Stratus. My guy Ian Carey is a preview up on our website. Stratton's a minus 2,000 favorite. He also thinks she's going to retain. That makes a lot of sense. Trish is not a full-time wrestler at this point anymore. She's had a couple bouts this year, but yeah, she seems to be angling for something. Maybe she wants her own retirement tour. I don't know, but I don't think she's going to win here, but yeah, she looks great and still can wrestle, so she's in. We have the main event, which is WWE Women's World Champion Io Sky defending against Rhea Ripley, excuse me. And Rhea Ripley, Ian thinks that she is going to win the title. She's listed right now as a 500 favorite. Sure, makes sense. She's one of the group's top stars, and why not? But who knows? Io Sky could pull that out and retain. We have WWE Women's Intercontinental Champion Becky Lynch defending against Bayley and Lyra Valkyria. In a three-way, Lyra Valkyria, say that three times fast. In a three-way, he thinks Lynch is going to retain. Sounds good to me. NXT Women's Champion JC Jane defending against Jordynne Grace. Ian thinks that Jordynne Grace is going to win the title. Seems to be her time, so we'll go with that. And we also have WWE Women's Tag Team Champions Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez taking on Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss, Asuka and Kairi Sane, and Saul Ruka and Zari. He thinks that Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss are going to win. Charlotte Flair been in the news quite a bit this week. Seems to make a lot of sense that everything was placed how it was and a little bit more attention on her. So I'm going to go with that as well. I like these picks. Jade Cargill taking on Naomi in a no-holds-barred match. He thinks Cargill is going to win, setting up some future stuff later. And, of course, then we have a battle royal for a title shot at Clash in Paris. Some confirmed entrants, including Nikki Bella, Stephanie Vaquer, Natalya, and so on and so forth. And he thinks Nikki Bell is going to win. I'm going to say I don't know because I want to see who the other surprise entrants are. But it should be quite a night in Atlanta for WWE Evolution. Come right back. We'll wrap up the show. Wrestling Observer Live. Back in a second. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason. Wrapping things up. Got 2 minutes left. So we've gone through everything. Let's look at the week ahead, shall we? I mean, we haven't even got through this week. And I'm telling you, we have to look at more wrestling coming up in the next 7 days. So, of course, Monday on Raw, it'll be the fallout from everything that happened this week and everything that happens at Evolution, everything that happened Saturday night's main event. Like I said, I think we'll get the Seth Rollins, I'm injured, I'm leaving speech, babyface speech, and it'll be gone for, better part of a year, probably, depending on what the severity of the injury is. Hopefully I'm wrong, and hopefully it's not as serious, but I think we kind of know what's going on. NXT on Tuesday, the fallout from the Great American Bash, a show that basically was the tree falling in the woods, so did anyone hear it type thing and no one's around. Story to get to for another day. AEW Dynamite coming this Wednesday. Again, the fallout from All In, so a lot of big implications there. I hope they have a really great follow-up show. Some of their follow-up shows after pay-per-views are kind of eh, and I want this one to be good, and they really need it to be good, so I'm looking forward to that. Thursday, Ring of Honor, we have the fallout from Supercard of Honor. We also have TNA Impact coming up on Thursday as they head to Slammiversary coming up next Sunday. Collision being taped on Thursday for this Saturday. We have SmackDown on Friday, which of course will be the follow-up from all the other stuff I talked about. Saturday night's main event, Evolution. I believe John Cena is going to be on this show. I'm not sure. Maybe it was last week. I'm a little behind on who is going where. Collision on Saturday, and then of course TNA Slammiversary this Sunday, July 20th, and we'll talk more about that next weekend. Boy, what a lot of wrestling. Did you catch it all? Follow me. Let me know what you watched on Twitter or X, Josh Nason, JOSHNASON. And I hope you get outside. I hope you watch some other stuff other than wrestling for tonight or tomorrow. Just take a break and let your brain reset because there's way more wrestling ahead. It never stops. Thank you so much for joining me this week on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. I'll be right here with you next Sunday, anywhere you're listening to this. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason. Talk to you next week.